Chapter 5. Brazzaville radio came through weekly on the set, and the static was bad, for outside the rain still fell and thunder rolled around the sky like an unsecured cargo in a high sea. Our Elizabethville correspondent reports that elements of the Katangi's army in the South Kasai province today violated the ceasefire agreement by firing upon a low-flying aircraft of the United Nations Command. The aircraft, a Vampire jet fighter of the Indian Air Force, returned safely to its base at Kamina Airfield. The pilot, however, was wounded by small arms fire. His condition is reported as satisfactory. The United Nations commander in Katanga, General Rhee, has lodged a strong protest with the Katangi's government. The announcer's voice was overlaid by the electric crackle of static. "We winged him," rejoiced Wally Hendry. The scab on his cheek had dried black with angry red edges. "Shut up," snapped Bruce. "We're trying to hear what's happening." "You can't hear a bloody thing now. Andre, there's a bottle in my pack. Get it. I'm going to drink to that coolie with a bullet up his..." Then the radio cleared and the announcer's voice came through loudly. "At Senwati Mission, 50 miles from the river harbour of Port Reprieve." A spokesman for the central Congolese government denied that Congolese troops were operating in this area, and it is feared that a large body of armed bandits is taking advantage of the unsettled conditions to... Again the static drowned it out. "Damn this set," muttered Bruce as he tried to tune it. "Stated today that the removal of missile equipment from the Russian bases in Cuba had been confirmed by aerial reconnaissance." "That's all that we're interested in." Bruce switched off the radio. "What a shambles. Ruffy, where is Senwati Mission?"
"Top end of the swamp near the Rhodesian border."
50 miles from Port Reprieve," muttered Bruce, not attempting to conceal his anxiety.
"It's more than that by road, boss, more like 100.
"That should take them 3 or 4 days in this weather, with time off for looting along the way," Bruce calculated. "It'll be cutting it fairly fine. We must get through to Port Reprieve by tomorrow evening and pull out again at dawn the next day."
"Why not keep going tonight?" Hendry removed the bottle from his lips to ask.
"Better than sitting here being eaten by mosquitoes."
"We'll stay," Bruce answered. "It won't do anybody much good to derail this lot in the dark."
He turned back to Ruffy. 3 hour watches tonight, Sergeant Major. Lieutenant Haig will take the first, then Lieutenant Hendry, then Lieutenant Desourier, and I'll do the dawn spell."
"Okay, boss. I better make sure my boys aren't sleeping."
He left the compartment, and the broken glass from the corridor windows crunched under his boots. "I'll be on my way also." Mike stood up and pulled the ground sheet over his shoulders. "Don't waste the batteries of the searchlights, Mike. Sweep every 10 minutes or so."
"Okay, Bruce."
Mike looked across at Hendry.
"I'll call you at 9 o'clock.
"Jolly good show, old fruit," Wally exaggerated Mike's accent.
"Good hunting, what?"
And then as Mike left the compartment, "Silly old bugger. Why does he have to talk like that?" No one answered him, and he pulled up his shirt behind.
"Andre, what's this on my back?"
"It's a pimple."
"Well, squeeze it then."
Bruce woke in the night, sweating, with the mosquitoes whining about his face. Outside it was still raining, and occasionally the reflected light from the searchlight on the roof of the coach lit the interior dimly. On one of the bottom bunks, Mike Haig lay on his back. His face was shining with sweat, and he rolled his head from side to side on the pillow. He was grinding his teeth, a sound to which Bruce had become accustomed, and he preferred it to Hendry's snores.
"You poor old bugger," whispered Bruce.
From the bunk opposite, Andre Desourier whimpered. In sleep, he looked like a child, with dark, soft hair falling over his forehead.